Welcome back to Toys on Tap. This week is a rad week. We bring Scott Cherry back on the podcast to talk about his pivot away from comics and away from all the stuff that he could be doing to simplify it and do full toys and dive hardcore into toys. If you want more Toys on Tap, you can like, follow, rate, review wherever you get podcasts. It helps us out and it's free for you. If you want to support the show even more, you can follow on all social medias at Toys on Tap. And if you want to jump on and support even more, you can go on patreon.com/toysontap. That's where you're going to find nitty gritty episodes. That's where you're going to find extra content. And now a new show with Spanky Stokes called Tapped In Beyond the Shelf. And let's get back to this week's episode of Toys on Tap. Two episodes. This is your third. Can't wait. We have so much to catch up on because we had a conversation at Tag Fest that kind of... seemed alarming in the moment, and I thought you were giving up everything, and then it was like, no, we're just pivoting. So I want to talk about that, talk about Designer Con, and kind of catch me up on where you're headed in art and stuff, because I think that you've been around long enough and to see pivots and turns is normal. But before we do that, like always, introduce yourself, tell us who you are, what you do.
All right. My name is Scott Cherry. People know me as Barbarian Rage, and I make toys.
Yeah, you do. It's always, this is the best and worst thing. Like, it's hard seeing you at conventions because I know I'm going to stand there for 30 or 40 minutes, and we're just going to talk about everything. Mm-hmm. And I see people walk by me that are like, it's seemingly trying to get your attention, and you're one of the artists, and I'm like, huh, wait your turn. I'm in this. Tell me about Tag Fest. Tell me, because it's been a while since you've been on. So tell me how that was and the pivot and all that stuff that was starting to happen there.
I like that show. Yeah. You know, Tag Fest was fun. It's a small, it was just a small little show. They sold that building, so I don't know if they're going to do that again.
Yeah.
No, that was a fun show. You know, it was like, oh man, it was like, I have a new toy out, Necrovenger. And that was like the week that that toy had showed up, like all of the cases, all the boxes had showed up. And I was like, I really want to just focus on this, but I wasn't ready to release it at Tag Fest. So I was like, I just did a few small customs, and so my booth looks so pathetic at Tag Fest. I think I had like literally like six toys on the table, but you know, those all sold, and that was a great show because they sold early and I got the rest of the day to just go hang out with everyone, which, you know, that's the real point of that show.
Yeah. It was a cool show.
Any show. Yeah.
Yeah. I drove up from San Diego to go to that show. And I think I left that show with four or five interviews scheduled.
Yeah.
So it was pretty, that's better than I've done at DesignerCon.
Yeah. Great to make all the connections.
Yeah.
Meet everyone. Yeah. I like a good small show. You know, I know everyone's like, DCon, it's the big show. You know, but like, I like a nice small show.
Yeah,
I do.
When we were there, you kind of talked a little bit about a pivot in your own art career, because I asked about the comics and how that was going and the toys for that and those types of things. And you'd said that you were maybe slowly moving away from that kind of stuff. Tell me about the comic thing and where you're headed with that. If it's, yeah.
So the comic book is on, I would say, a hiatus. You know, I really only have one issue left, but it will be a massive undertaking. you know. So if if you're listening to this and you haven't seen my comic book, it's made of photos of like puppets, so it's not like a hand-drawn thing. So anytime that they go meet someone new or they go to a new place, I have to make a whole new set, make a whole new puppet that's like fully articulated, and make clothes and props and weapons and all that stuff. And so the last issue has several different sets and several new people, and it's just going to take so much time. And, you know, when I had gotten to the comic book, it was like comic books and sketch covers and wax packs, trading cards, and, you know, the toys, obviously. And, you know, it had just sort of gotten to be like too much, you know. Well, because I wanted it to be like He-Man, where I'm like, I want bed sheets and toothbrushes and alarm clocks and all this stuff. And it's like, but that business model worked, you know, 40 years ago. Yeah. It doesn't work for a singular artist making toys. So, you know, really what the pivot was going to pare everything down and just focus on making the toys that I would want to put on my shelf. And, you know, the simplicity of it is the key, is just make a cool toy.
Yeah.
You know, and that's it. And, you know, it's hard to be simple. It's hard to, because it took a long time for me to get to that resolution. You know, it's like when you see like traditional American tattoos, how simple they are. But they're not simple, they're hard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's very hard to be simple.
Yeah.
And so look, you know, this year I will be doing toys for like 10 years. And so I've done 3 3/4 inch. I've done, you know, obviously resin and hand-drawn card backs and bootlegs, original stuff. You know, I did Mad Balls, and I've experimented with so many different materials and everything. And so, you know, I rebranded last year, and I was like, this is the scale that I'm going to work in, and this is the aesthetic that I'm going for.
Mm-hmm.
And that was it. You know, it took like 10 years for me to sort of arrive at a conclusion of all of this that I've been doing has culminated into what I'm doing now. From people that have bought my stuff in the past, or, you know, followed me on Instagram in the past, you know, because when I explain it, I go, look, they go, okay, well, what's different about this, Scott? What were you doing before?
You're like, everything. Yeah.
Everything, you know. Yeah. And so yeah, to only focus on my original vision and my original sculpts, original toys, you know, I've sort of left bootlegging behind me. You know, when I first started making toys and bootlegs, my idea was, I'm going to make these toys until I learn how to make my own toys. Because I was a sculptor when I first started bootlegging. But there's a difference between being able to sculpt and sculpting a toy.
It looks like Godzilla, but due to international copyright laws, it's not.
Still, we should run like it is Godzilla!
Though it isn't.
The newest kaiju is about to stomp its way onto the scene.
What's that smell?
Meet Barfy. The sludge-spewing kaiju inspired by the lizard we all know and love. Coming from the brain of Bootleg Toy Co. and brought to life by Toys on Tap. This monstrosity will come in at a massive 6 inches in 3 styles. 1 blank white and 2 colorways exclusive to Toys on Tap. The first colorway is Barfy's natural colors. And the second is... That's right, Reptar colorway.
Now that's entertainment!
This monstrosity will arrive in a clear box with a backer that doubles as a backdrop for your figure. Barfy arrives on the scene soon. You don't want to miss this, but remember, stay out of the way of the sludge.
There is a difference. And then, I mean, you even see seasoned veteran toy sculptors sculpt a shit toy. It happens. So yeah, that's there's a lot of subtle differences, but that's what Barbarian Rage is now.
Yeah. I mean, what's tough, and I think you would agree, creating your own IP is already a feat in itself. And so creating your own IP that has cards and comics and stickers and everything you can imagine is so crazy hard. And so to pare it down to say like, no, I'm going to create my own IP, but it's just going to be toys. Is there some part of you that is relieved in that?
I don't know if I would say it's a relief, because there's still this nagging thing, because I know that I am going to finish that comic book.
Yeah.
So it's still like in the back of my brain, like, you didn't finish that. It's also not like, well, now that I've cut all this stuff out, you know, I have all this time to be doing all this other stuff, you know, cause I'm always busy doing one thing or another. Mm-hmm. Just because you stop doing one thing doesn't mean that it alleviates all of this other stuff. It's like quitting smoking,
right?
You know, like when I quit smoking cigarettes, everyone's like, think of all the money that you'll have. And then you quit smoking and you're like, well, the money's going somewhere, because it's not in my pocket.
Yeah.
And you know, it's not like when you quit smoking, like you get all the money that you spent on the cigarettes back. You know, it's just that your time and attention gets reallocated elsewhere.
Yeah.
But you know, and like I said, the toys that I'm doing now sort of do fit into this universe of that comic book, because in my head, the comic book, I had created a whole universe, and things that would never even make it into the comic book, they still exist. You know, I used to play a lot of Dungeons and Dragons, and you know, there would be, you would find a treasure chest and you open it but you can't just find a treasure chest in the middle of the room. Like there has to be a reason that it's there, you
right.
know, like there has to be a history behind it. Like these goblins, they were these goblin pirates and they left the treasure there 100 years ago. You know, like, so for me to even do this comic book, every little thing had to have a backstory. So, you know, if I really did want to go back into this comic book full force, the toys would fit in, because they are all fit into this universe that I've created, you know? So, yeah.
That's crazy. I mean, I have one here. I immediately, I remember seeing you at TagFest. I said, oh, like put me down for a couple of them when they come in, and then seeing you at Designer Con, and I'm a sucker for Clear. I don't know why.
So am I.
And it's,
you know, I think it was my love of Crystar when I was a kid.
Yeah.
I loved Crystar, but, I remember going to Kmart and all of the Clear ones were always, sold out.
It's crazy too. You use the word simple. In no way is this a simple tool. I mean, you got 4 points of articulation. I've seen the design in which you fill the middle parts, like how you paint it. So it's like you moved all the complexity from all the different ways into just one, which is great.
Okay. There again, like I get caught up in all that stuff and I want to simplify it so bad. And
but it's so like good.
Said, being simple is so hard.
Yeah.
So like some of like the, some of the better, like you look at like some of the Japanese sculptors that do like, you know, traditional Sufubi, you know, they are very simple designs, but it's like, you know, to someone that's not like a toy fiend or something, they go, well, that's just a, but like to someone that actually knows, they would look at that and they would be like, wow, it's really kind of a masterpiece.
Mm-hmm. The paint on Sufubi in general drives me nuts because my brain says, no, I want a crisp line. Mm-hmm. But then you look at like actual Sufubi painted by Japanese artists and it's like overspray and dabs and yeah.
Sure. Yeah. And I like that. I really do. But it, again, that's not my style
right.
of painting, you know. Like I said, I come from like a Dungeons and Dragons background mm-hmm. and I love painting minis and stuff like that. So a lot of times when I paint the figures, I, you know, it is like painting a mini, you know, because I don't know any better.
Yeah.
You know, I'm only like maybe a year and a half into airbrushing. So a lot of those like Sufubi, like the subtleties of just like a quick spray, you know, or you see the old timers in Japan just go psh, 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 and everyone, oh, they everyone claps, you know, and it's like, well, you know, he's a master at that. He yeah. spent his entire life doing that. And it would be nice to do, you know, almost like a Picasso thing where he would go psh, 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 and this is this masterpiece, but I'm not there yet.
Yeah. This is your first Sufubi, correct?
No, I did one other one before that. That was sort of a blank.
That's right.
He-Man.
Yeah, yeah. You made all the clothes yeah. on it and armor.
So that one, that's like probably the most simple toy I've ever made mm-hmm. because the simplicity behind that was due to it was a stroke of inspiration, I'll say. When I was painting, I did those massive blow mold He-Man mm-hmm. toys and I painted all the tattoos all over those. But you know, that blow mold is not a great sculpt. And it's got, you know, He-Man, so it's got these big bulbous
yeah.
features all over it. And I was painting, so I would draw the tattoo out first and then I would transfer it onto the body and it would be all distorted because it's on this big bulbous muscle or on this curve. So I'd have to like redraw it on the thing. And I was like, this would be so much easier if it was just like a flat surface. And I had this jolt and I was like, you need to design a toy that's just flat like that. So you can just paint like that. And so that was the inspiration for that toy. And I figured, you know, it's a 5.5 figure and, you know, that's virtually featureless. I was like, you could customize that a million different ways, literally a million different ways. You can turn this into whatever you want. And I did, you know, I did Faker and, you know, battle armor, you know, yeah. and Scareglow and You could literally, I mean, it's just like He-Man, you know, He-Man only had a couple different parts and they were all like, you put this arm on and these legs, and then you got Beast Man and Skeletor and whatever. So with that toy, I wanted to make it customizable as possible.
Yeah. Walk me through the process of sculpting the Necro then. This is looks very different and has a different feel than the first one. And hand sculpted, correct?
Yes.
So
everything I do is hand sculpted. Not because I'm against digital sculpting.
Yeah.
You know,
they're coming for you if you say that.
I'm not a Luddite, but it's simply just because I haven't taken the time to sit and learn it. I talked to George Gaspar like a year ago, and he was like, I really think that you should learn digital sculpting. And I talked to some of the guys at Four Horsemen and they're like, you really should. And I was like, yeah, I should. You know, I'm gonna. For the new year, I went back and I was looking at some of my journal entries and I was like, dude, I'm really stoked on learning digital sculpting. I haven't spent 1 minute learning digital sculpting in a year. So I'm like, this year, maybe this year will be the year for digital sculpting.
Yeah.
You never know. But no, my stuff is all made by hand. Yeah.
Made by hand. I mean, I've gone through the process of like what it looks like to get a digital sculpt to a factory, and so simple because it's an immediate thing. Mm-hmm. Do you have to, after you sculpt this, 3D scan and ship off, or do you send them this?
No, you know.
Empire. Empire Blisters. Specializing in action figure blisters. 3.75 inch or 1/18 scale. 19 different styles. Two sizes of clamshell figure cases. Four different bulk pack options. Quantities of 100 sample packs available. Empire Blisters.
Now sponsoring Toys on Tap.
That means a 10% off coupon on checkout. Use code Toys on Tap 10. That's TOYSOMTAP 10.
Empire Blisters. Empire Blisters.
This is why I should learn digital, because it's such a task.
Yeah.
So once the original is done, then you have to make molds and resin casts of every piece. Then, you know, clean up all the resin, then ship it over to the factory. Then they take those resin pieces, then they make another mold and make a wax copy of it. Then they make a mold of the wax copy. And then that's the mold that they use for the vinyl. And I'm like, you know, it would just be so much easier to, you know, I was talking to Tony Mora. Have you ever had him on?
I don't think
He's a fantastic artist. I really love that guy. And I was thinking about even maybe for this next one, you know, The next toy is already sculpted. I was like, maybe I'll just get a 3D scan of the toy and send it over. It just seems infinitely easier than, you know, making several resin or several silicone molds and pouring the resin. And then you only need like one or two good copies out of it. And then it's like, what are you going to do with the rest of the molds? And
yeah.
Blah, blah, blah. You know, I feel like it's this torture that we've all, you know, it's like this self-imposed torture that we have on ourselves. But, you know, that's art. That's the life of an artist.
Yeah. I will say in the new sculpt that I have over there, it's just such a quick, I mean, one, the language barrier is very fun to, if you've never had that. Fun interaction. But it's, they like circle things. They're like, hey, have the sculptor fix this real quick, or have the, and that is, I couldn't imagine if they looked at the resin thing, they were like, hey, you need to adjust this.
They adjusted on the wax.
Okay.
So
okay.
It's a bit of a collaboration. So there is stuff, I don't like getting into exactly what it is, but there is stuff on the Necrovendor that I do not like. That was fixed in the wax.
Okay.
but you know, I've never done anything that I'm like, I'm 100% satisfied in this right. painting, in this drawing, in this sculpture, in this project. You know, even if it gets to 99%, you know, it took me years to, you know, when I would finish a painting and one of my friends would be like, wow, Scott, I really love that. And I go, yeah, but I fucked up the eye right here. And, you know, I remember one of my friends, he looked at me and he goes, just take the fucking compliment. And that really hit me because yeah. I'm like, you know, the first thing that you want to do is be self-deprecating,
yeah.
you know, like it's hard to accept a compliment on your artwork. So, you know, as an artist, all you see is the mistakes.
Yeah, it is. That does seem challenging, and it's a lot of trust to be in that collaborative effort with a factory.
Yeah, you know, because to sit there and spend all of this time and all of your emotion,
yeah,
and everything, all of your creativity and everything locked up into this piece, and then you go and then you hand it over and you go, here you go, you finish it.
Yeah,
there's a lot of trust there. I used to live by this artist. He was like such a stereotypical artist. He's this old British guy. He would always wear all black, and he would paint wearing this black beret, and he would paint these giant canvases, you know, and they were so big that he would have to paint them outside of his studio. So I would go over there and talk to him. And one day he had all of his paintings out, and I said, hey, you know, what are you doing with these? And he says, well, someone's going to come over. I'm going to pay him to put a top coat on all of these.
Mm.
And I was like, wow. I'm like, aren't you nervous that he's going to screw those up? And he looks at me. He goes, Scott, he goes, I love you. He goes, you're the only person that understands, because you spend all of this time putting all of your time and emotion into this project, and then you hand it over to this one person to do the last detail.
Yeah,
you know, you sit there and you chew your fingernails and you pull your hair out. You know, it's very stressful, especially since it takes months sometimes. You know, and you're like, hey guys, how's it going?
Yeah,
how's the thing going? Oh, okay. Then it's also like, you know, more money that I've ever spent on anything.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean, no, it's nerve wracking. It's a whole new territory, you know, from being, you know, a resin toy maker to making vinyl, you know, even just finding my footing, you know, I'm still so new to me.
Yeah. I think, you know, we talked about the pivot that you were making at Tag Fest, and then seeing you at Designer Con, you could visibly see the pivot that was taking shape, in that usually your booth has this, like, this set design that you have, like, sculpted and put together. But this year it really focused on, these are the toys, look at them. And that was, I love booths like that, because I mean, I interact with toy artists all over Designer Con. So it's really cool to see, like, oh no, you're just pushing your toy forward, because that's what I'm here for anyways.
Yeah.
And so what was that set shift like for you to, like, kind of hold yourself back from creating something like that?
That was hard, because, you know, I did do that giant set for Designer Con that one year, and it was hard the next year, because that's what everyone asked about. Dude, I can't wait to see what you're gonna build this year.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, I'm like, really, I just bought some higher tables and that's it. You know, so It was hard because I think people had this expectation of me like making some like big crazy thing. You know, it didn't happen at DesignerCon this year. It might in the future. I like doing stuff like that. I love building sets and, you know, scenery and stuff. You know, that was a big part of my comic book. And yeah, I, you know, I have some ideas for cool displays, you know, coming up. But like I said, you know, that's one thing, but focusing on the toys is that's the real crux of everything that I do right now. Because if I start to branch out too much, and I'm guilty of this so bad, where I go, you know what, I got a great idea. I'm going to make this big thing over here. And I always have to recenter and say, like, you really just need to focus on the toys.
Yeah.
You know, because I do get distracted real easily. You know, I want to do a painting. I want to do watercolors. Oh, this paper mache thing, this would look really cool. And, but it takes a lot of willpower to recenter and continue working on something. You know, like when I was in my 20s and I was learning how to paint and sculpt and all this stuff, I never finished anything. Mm-hmm. You know, because I would be like, oh, I got a great new idea and this idea. And I'm like, well, that idea is old. And so, like, through all of my 20s, nothing ever got done. It always got about 80% done and then completely abandoned.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe a few paintings made it out alive, a lot of sketchbook stuff. But, you know, learning how to just complete something A to Z, it's a massive undertaking. I mean, like, so like for the Necrovenger, it was, you know, when you sculpt the entire toy, when the sculpt is done, you know, you go, well, that's done, but it's not, because now you got to make the molds. And you go, well, that's done. And you go, well, no, now you got to make the resin.
Yeah.
You go, okay, well, now that's done. Well, no, now you got to wait for it to get made over there. And when that was getting made, I made some t-shirts and I designed a logo for it and everything. So it was all, by the time it was done, it wasn't just a toy, but it was this massive project with all these working parts and all these moving gears. And so that, I'm really fucking proud of that one, because that was not just one project, but many projects. I don't know if the listener is just listening on audio, but you know, like even just doing this painting,
mm-hmm.
This was a few weeks of work just on this painting. So just to do the card art, you know, that's a whole new project. And then I did like a death metal logo for the Necrovenger. Yeah. That's a whole nother project. And then I did an image for the shirt. That's a whole nother project. So you put all of that stuff together, you know, to make one thing.
Yeah. And I mean, on top of that, let's like, there are things that don't even get talked about, like improving on paint skills or mm-hmm. like the amount of time it takes that once the toys arrive, the Necro doesn't really have like, we're not doing a run of 100 of one paint scheme. Like you're doing customs and one-offs and it's
intense. The original green is an open edition.
Okay.
So yeah, but I'm not up to 100 yet, but there's, I've done a lot.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and also to tack onto the end of that, like even after the wax gets approved and the toy, the prototype gets approved and everything, once it gets back, you know, the Necrovenger has an eyeball on the inside of the chest. Like now that has to get sculpted. And then I have to figure out the paint scheme for it, because I painted the card art before I even painted one of the toys. I have to now I have to reverse engineer the paint job to match the card art. So it's just a massive project.
It's crazy. I mean, can we talk about the eye?
Yeah.
How do you make the eye work? Because if it goes on the inside, like I have the clear one, so it doesn't have the eye, but if it goes on the inside, you got to squeeze it through these little holes. Yeah.
It goes in through the chest.
Oh, okay.
Or it goes up through like the hip.
Oh, okay. Okay. Okay.
So here, this is one that Magitarius painted. So the eye is inside here. And so when you take the legs out, you just heat up the bottom and then you just put it up in through there.
Awesome. I mean, because I've seen when you've done resin, I've seen the customs, nothing you've ever done with the toys feels half done. And so it's not a shock that when you get a toy made that's completely your own, that there's all kinds of crazy coolness that goes into it, like an eye on the inside and stuff. And so, I mean, I think the question I have, if you continue to want to move towards simplicity in all of that, is there a part of you that like you feel might get left behind in moving that way?
No, because, you know, unless it's, this is going to sound egotistical, but I'm trying
to edit. Don't worry.
You know, I always say, like, look, unless it's like totally awesome, then why even do it?
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, if I don't like it, or if my heart's not in it, or if it's not totally awesome, I'm not doing it. You know, I always say, I live by this, is the thing that I'm working on right now, if it's not the coolest thing I've ever done, then why are we doing this?
Right.
You know, if what you're working on right now isn't the best thing that you've ever done, then why are you doing it? You know, and exploring those questions are important. Why are you doing that then? You know, so, you know, you might be able to find out why you're doing it, but my battle cry is Toys Excelsior, onward and upward. And, you know, I bit that from Stan Lee, obviously. Yeah. But it's true.
We interrupt this broadcast of Toys on Tap to bring you this.
Meanwhile, in a galaxy of bootleg treasures.
DOV2, we have engine failure. We must crash land on DKE Toy Planet.
Oh my, we're doomed.
Wait, salvation. Hooray, we're saved, DOV2. Limited edition custom artist made action figures and DKE toys.
Check out www.dketoys.com for a full catalog.
Hooray for custom action figures.
DKE.
You know, the next thing that you're working on should be cooler than the last thing that you're working on. And, you know, I'm always learning and trying to improve. And once you stop learning and stop trying to improve, your shit gets stale quick.
Yeah.
And it happens a lot with artists, you know, or they'll find something that really works and something that, you know, people really love. But how boring would Andy Warhol's shit be if he's like, here's another Campbell's can.
Yeah.
Everyone would be like, yeah, I get it. I got it, Andy.
It's a soup can. Sure. We understand.
I fucking get it, Andy. All right. So, you know, and then even the stuff at towards the end of his career wasn't as celebrated as that other stuff. But, you know, I see people that are doing the same thing for 20, 30 years. And I go, that's fucking, I would get so fucking bored doing that, you know?
You're kind of scratching at like
ahead.
An insecurity that I think a lot of us have.
Okay.
And I think I struggle with it a lot with the podcast as a whole. Like that's why I'm constantly trying to figure out like that little Safubi zine. Like, how do I get that out? How do I make new content? Because if you break down my podcast, I just interview artists every freaking week. And I love it.
Mm-hmm.
And my hope is that the listeners love it, but you're scratching, like, how do we continue to improve? How do we continue to move forward? And the question is, I don't always know.
Mm-hmm. I mean, trying new things is, I like to try new things, and sometimes you try something and it doesn't work, but a year later you go back to it and then it does work.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes it's timing and luck and all of that. But, doing what's true to yourself and what you think is good, that will eventually resonate with people. You know, David Lynch just passed away a week or so ago. And, God, that hit me so weird, because he was such a huge influence on everything that I've ever done, even though I'm not a filmmaker.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's because he had such a unique voice and he was such an individual, and it was strange that when he passed away, everyone was like, he was my favorite director. You know, I didn't expect that from like everyone that I know.
Mm-hmm.
Because I always think that he's sort of this niche director or whatever, but there was no one like him. And, you know, after he did Eraserhead, you know, critics would like it, but that's not gonna be like a mainstream release.
Right.
And if you showed that to a lot of people, they would be like, I don't get this, and it's ugly and it's boring and it's loud. And but he made movies for himself. You know, that's the best artwork. I think that's what Rick Rubin says too, where he says, you shouldn't be making artwork for other people. You should be making it for yourself. You know, he's like, your artwork should be like a diary entry. You know, it shouldn't be for other people to consume. He's like, it should be for you. It should be for you personally. Or Andy Kaufman, you know, one of my favorite comedians ever. He would go out and intentionally bomb. You know, he would go out and do the stupid shit, and people would get angry with him. But it was only funny to him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And sometimes it takes a second. It takes a while for people to dial in and be like, dude, David Lynch is an amazing director. And it took a long time for people to dial in on Andy Kaufman and be like, dude, he was a genius. But doing the things that you want to do and being true to yourself, that's what's going to pay off the most, you know, because these things that they're like Eraserhead, it wasn't like this massive success where he's like, I got to keep doing this. You know, he was like, I'm just going to keep doing this no matter what.
Right.
You know, so, and he tried different things, you know, and And same thing with Andy Kaufman and Rick Rubin, you know, all of these like, you know, highly creative people. And, you know, so it's not just me giving that advice. That's old advice that, sort of everyone, gives, you know?
Yeah. One of the things I think I value about you as an artist is that you, on top of trying to improve and building with your art and sculpts and painting and God, everything that goes into that, you're constantly reading and connecting things to the toy art world. So for some reason, we forget incredibly fast in this world that, like, if I make toys, that means I'm PR, I'm media, I'm finance, I'm CEO.
Marketing.
Yeah. And if that's true.
Web designer.
Yeah. Yeah. And so how, like, and the thing that I ask people, it's like I keep going back and forth with people constantly on Instagram where you see these things pop up. They're like, I'm shadow banned. I don't think that's true. I think what it is maybe your photography needs to up itself. Maybe you need to post frequently. Maybe like these things need to change, but you're also trying to use Instagram for what it wasn't made for. And it's not going to favor you because you're not doing it right. Mm-hmm. And so it's like learning all those things, but you constantly are talking about these other books that you've read to bring that knowledge into the toy world and to fix. So what is that like when you look at your toy career, do you just like, okay, I'm not good at this. Let me find five people that are and absorb that. Is that how you're functioning?
Yes. Well, you know, it's hard too, because like, if you use your example of Instagram where you go like, oh, all my posts are tanking.
Yeah.
And then you go, well, how do I get good at Instagram? And, you know, I'll tell you how to get good at Instagram. You tell everyone else how to get good at Instagram.
Yeah.
And those posts always do the best where they go, these five things are going to give you a million new followers. And everyone's like, how do I do it? I've experimented with that before. It's kind of shitty, but it's true. Like, I've done like live, I've gone live on Instagram where I go, you know, how to get 1,000 new followers in 5 days. And then it was like 100 people came into the room and I was like, I don't really have the answer. I was just joking around and then everyone leaves. But, you know, but my advice on that is find like one or two people that you trust and you know are going to do a good job and you can adhere to their advice. Mm-hmm. Because if you listen to, you know, if you go like, are you shadow banned? You know, does your content suck? You know, you need to stop posting carousels. And you go, okay, I'm not posting carousels anymore. And then you go listen to this other knob. And he goes, the way to get true engagement is only post carousels. Mm. You go, well, which one is it? You know, so a big thing is strategy, I think, you know, because if you go, well, this post, I posted this, it didn't get any likes, so I'm going to change it to this. And I'm going to change it to this. But, you know, like, when I rebranded, I said, you know, instead of doing a 3 3/4 inch resin toy, and then this is my vinyl toy, and then this is my comic book, and then this is like a mad ball, I was like, look, you just pick a scale and release toys that will all fit in with that scale.
Yeah.
And make everything uniform. No matter how long it takes, stick to that strategy. And I think a lot of what's missing is strategy. So if you want to take your Instagram example, you need to lay out a strategy. lay out, you know, get one of these calendars that says Monday, post a carousel, Tuesday, post a reel, you know, Wednesday, and then get all that stuff done, you know, take a day or two out of your week and get it all done. And then go through, if you really want to get good at Instagram, you know, look, I've given up on Instagram. I don't give a fuck about it anymore. You know what I mean? Like, a couple of years ago, maybe 2 years ago, I posted something. It got 5 likes. I've got 17,000 followers.
Yeah.
Humble brag. I'm just saying that's how much Instagram will cripple your account. Apropos of nothing. You know? So I'm like, that's when I have a meltdown. And then I started looking at everyone. I go, well, how do I get more Instagram engagement? You know what? Now I don't care.
Yeah.
I don't care, because Instagram now is not what it was before. So my advice.
Jump on the live.
My unsolicited advice.
Yeah.
Is everyone go get your own website. Get your own website and get your own platform. I just saw Curry, the toy guy. They wiped his Facebook account. You know? Just wait till someone hacks your Instagram.
Yeah.
You know? When you build your real estate on someone else's land, and they come and they punch your card, they go, this ain't yours anymore. It never was yours. You're sitting there empty handed and you go, all that work for nothing, you know? So, or like your Etsy shop or your eBay, you know, you get one upset person on your eBay, they're going to pull you, you know, on Etsy. Etsy is crazy, because if you're making bootleg toys or if you're making artwork or handbags or whatever you're making on Etsy, when someone goes to your page, they advertise other people's stuff on your page.
Yeah.
So if someone goes to your page to go buy a bootleg toy, they go, hey, look at all these other guys that are making bootleg toys. And they go, oh, okay. And then they go look at it, and then they forget about you. So that's my advice. And that's where, I'm still on Instagram. It's still fun to.
What up, toy nerds? This is Ray.
And Dave. Go check out our brand new YouTube channel, The Toy Rats.
We make toys.
We talk about toys.
We talk about old toys.
And new toys.
And toys that we make.
And we're just a bunch of goofballs. It's a good time.
We make fun of Dave a lot.
I'm all right with that. So yeah, if you get a chance, go check out Toy Rats on YouTube. You won't be disappointed. You might be.
Yeah, you could. Who knows?
You got to check it out.
Toy Rats. Toy Rats. YouTube.
Bye.
Bye.
You know, futz around on it and look at what other people are doing. But I don't recommend, you know, I've heard this from so many people. Man, if Instagram were to shut down, we'd be fucked. Look what happened to TikTok. Look at how many people built their real estate on TikTok. They go, I sold all my products on TikTok. I've got, you know, 5 million followers on TikTok. I feed my kids. Yeah, well, we don't allow that anymore. You know, that's a harsh realization. So it's a little bit harder. It's a lot harder to start and maintain your own website. But it's worth it in the long run, because, you know, what's next? You know, even those people that got their TikTok torn down, you know, I don't know. I'm not on that site or that app. So I don't know, like, if people come back to their account and they get all their followers back, or I don't know how that works, but I don't know. I feel bad for the people that it happened to. And, you know, also, like, when that happens with Instagram or YouTube, you're on YouTube, you know, you can't say fuck a certain amount of times within a certain window. Otherwise, you're going to get flagged. And then three strikes, you're out. Then they cancel your account permanently. And then everything that you've worked for, even if you have 100 million subscribers, all that stuff that you've worked for is gone forever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because of these arbitrary rules. Even if they say, look, this is NC-17. This is a hard R. We use adult language here. You know, you still can't use that kind of language. You know, three F words within, you know, 1 minute, and then strike three. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, it is tough. I mean, you pushed me to do a newsletter when I was trying to figure that out. And it's growing. Like, I'm pumped to say that it's grown as much as it has. And
yeah,
people out there. And I think I do like a once a month thing. Like, this is what's coming. This is what happened. What's up? I don't want to spam people, and it's working.
That's great. Yeah. Once a month is not spamming people. You know, spam is sort of a overused term. Spam is an email that doesn't have an unsubscribe button.
Mm.
You know, I mean, spam can be used for, you know, there are companies that will email you every day or several times a day. And it's annoying. It's not technically spam. But, you know, my newsletter on barbarianrage.com, thank you very much. Thank you.
The plug, yeah.
Yeah. You know, I do it like once a week.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's not every week. And it's not just about me. There's some toy news. Sometimes I even say, like, hey, this person was on Toys on Tap last week. Go give it a listen. You know, and it's just some toy news that I think is interesting, not just about bootlegs or vinyls or, you know, whatever, maybe something that you might have missed. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it maybe takes a minute to read. It's never very long. And, you know, anyway, so I think it's a good idea for everyone to have like a newsletter or email list and their own website, because, you know, sitting there creating content for Instagram, you know, I don't know. It's depressing when I see people's Instagram get taken down, you know, or they'll say, like, it says that they had posted adult content or something, and they didn't. They genuinely didn't.
Yeah.
And so I don't know. That's my advice there again.
Yeah. I think, yeah, it is hard to be on Instagram and be on the platforms. I think my advice always to people is that if we're going to use something that's someone else's, and we're going to use something that, like, is really just meant to fake community, be in it. Like, I don't know, but, like, don't expect exchange.
No. And no, it's hard, because there's also so much ego involved too, because it's like, you know, I posted this and this only got 200 likes, but this thing got 400 likes.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it's like, it gets you, they make that, so you get self-conscious about it. So you will try all these different things and all this stuff. And it has taken a long time for me to be like, you know what? I don't give a shit how many likes this gets. I don't.
Yeah.
I don't. And it's difficult.
I think, I come back to on my Yucko Toys account. Mm-hmm. When I first made the Furbzerker with More Horrific, we posted it and we did a collaborative post. And it got almost as many likes as I have followers here, which is insane.
That's amazing. Yeah.
Here's the problem. That's unconvertible, because my dream is to produce it as Sifubi. And I can't get people to even say, like, I'll throw $25 in on that.
Why don't you do a Kickstarter?
Because I'm so freaking nervous and fickle.
Yeah, but that's the beauty of Kickstarter, is you hoist up your flag and see who salutes.
Yeah.
I think that you would do a, that. That would do well. I think there's enough people. Because also, there's not just Instagram people on Kickstarter. You know, Kickstarter has its own, is its own different beast.
Yeah.
You know, it's got people that are just on there every day, getting every single comic book that goes through on Kickstarter, every single toy, every single board game. You know, there are companies that they give a dollar to every single Kickstarter just to see how it pans out, or just to keep tabs on everyone. I don't know. It's been a long time since I've done a Kickstarter, but I think that would do pretty well. I mean, you never know.
All right.
Well, I might have to pick your brain and throw it up. And you've run successful Kickstarters.
Yeah, that was the beginning of my toy career. I funded my first toy on Kickstarter, and it was basically to fund all of the equipment that I needed for a toy. I tell everyone to do that. You know, everyone's like, oh, this stuff is so expensive. And I'm like, come up with a toy idea, put it on Kickstarter, people will buy you the equipment.
Yeah.
You know? Or I tell this to people too. I go, turn it into a real business and all that equipment is a write-off.
Heck, yeah, it is.
But look, no one ever listens to me.
Yeah. The write-off thing is so true. I have a tax guy, Toys on Tap. I write off some of my rent at home, my cell phone bill. Like, it's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
The big thing about, you know, when it's like write off, or you don't just like go get a pressure pot and an air compressor and go up to the counter and go, I'm going to be writing this off. And they go, oh, okay, well, this is free.
Correct. You still have to pay for it.
Yeah. Wait till April to get your.
Yeah. There's a show called Schitt's Creek, and in it, the son is talking to the dad. Yeah. And he's like, what is this? He goes, it's a write-off. Do you know what it means? I wrote it off.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, I've learned some of the stuff that I do with Toys on Tap from you and the things that we've talked about. And, it's been helpful. And I think I learn from, that type of stuff. And I mean, Dove has chimed in, and,
he's the real master.
Well, he said something one time. He said, make Toys on Tap podcast a website. And so I'm through Big Cartel, and then I have the domain Toys on Tap podcast. Mm-hmm. And he said, it was such a brash, like, he just went for it so quickly. He's like, you need to do this. Like, even if it's just for shits and giggles. And all I replied back, because I was like, okay, I'll do it. Fine. I was like, I shall do this and shit and giggle.
Yeah.
And he was right. He was right. Yeah. And I think I should have listened quicker.
Yes. You know, I've been in the same boat there too, where, you know, it'll be a year later or whatever. And I'm like, if I would have just listened to Dove, I would be in this, you know, I listened to what he has to say.
For your toy making and where you are headed, I know you have another sculpt that is done. Have you talked about it anywhere?
You know, I showed it on Toys on Tap, or Toys on Tap, on Toys Alive. Here, I'll show you.
Heck yeah. Because the next question is kind of where you're headed. Like, what's next for Barbarian Rage?
This one, it's going to be a little bit smaller than a 5.5. I wanted something that fits in with a 5.5 scale, but that is smaller. So, like, it's this little devil.
I love the hands that way.
Still working on a name, but I think I'm going with Blasphemer.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got these hands that are articulated like a Garamon or Pigmon or whatever. But this was inspired by the Black Star toys. With the Black Star, when you get one of the villains, it came with a pack-in with and it was called an alien demon. When I was a kid, I loved that thing.
Yeah.
In some cases, it was cooler than the toy that it came with, the actual toy. And in my opinion, I think that that's probably the most recognizable thing that came out of that Black Star series was that alien demon toy. So I wanted to make something, since I'm doing a 5.5, I wanted to do something a little bit smaller that would accompany the 5.5. Then I did something even smaller, which this is something that, let me see if, where's the camera here?
Oh, he's I don't know a good if you can one.
See that. So the top of this spins. So the top of the head has like six faces, and depending on how you twist it, his face changes.
Oh, I love
so
that.
So the expression on his face changes. So this is the next toy that I'm doing. So I made two smaller ones that I wanted to put like maybe on the same mold, but I think that this one might have been a little too small. So this is my crazy brain. I talked to Janky Toys the other day. He goes, this is probably the most Scott Cherry thing I've ever heard. So I'm doing a little bit bigger of a version of the really small version. And I was like, dude, if this was digital, just scanned the little one and then just blow it up a little bit. But I got it. I'm going all in and doing just a little bit bigger of a sculpt. So like, this is the size comparison. Like the small one is 2 inches.
Yeah.
And then the bigger one is maybe 3, maybe just a shade under 3 inches. Anyway, so it's the same principle where it's a lot of different looking faces.
Are those teeth that are the connecting point?
Yeah. So
oh, I love that.
The bottom is like a 360 row of teeth, and then the top. So he like grinds his teeth when you spin the top.
Oh, that's wonderful.
So I wanted to make something a little bit smaller and a little more affordable. I would say, you know, I know this stuff gets so expensive. You know, look, I like big, expensive stuff. You know, that's what everyone wants. Everyone wants the big, expensive thing. But there's something to be said about like cool, small stuff too. You know, I know like, especially American Sifubi guys, they're like, dude, it's going to be like this 18-inch thing. And
where am I going to put that?
Yeah, totally. You know, and that's why I'm like, I feel like a 5.5, maybe that's just the 5-year-old side of me. That's like, you know, I love T-Man so much and it's inspired everything that I've ever done. Almost everything that I've ever done artistically, that I was like, 5.5 is just the scale, you know, even like the Necrovenger, it's bigger than a 5.5. But that's just because like the helmet is so tall, you know,
yeah.
Like that stands up next to a Skeletor, you know.
That's cool. I'm glad that you are working with different sizes. And those are the next two, which are great. They scream Scott Cherry.
Thank you. Yeah. You know, and that's one thing that I've always been so conscious about, like, is style. You know, like sometimes, you know, like especially when you're doing a bootleg toy, it's hard to have style because you're working with other people's pieces. You're working with other people's stuff. And there are people like, you know, like Fionn. I mean, those are bootleg pieces, but boom, immediately, you know what that is.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, Titty Beans is another one where you go, you know what that is. but it is hard to have a voice using other people's pieces, and having a style, you know, that is what I want, is I want people to be able to, you know, I think, I want people to say from across the room, that's a Scott Cherry.
Yeah.
That's a Barbarian Rage. And, so moving forward, that's what I want to do, is create this collection, in my style. And, that's what I'm doing moving forward. So that, those are the next couple toys. And then I even have another 5.5 doing after this one. So, I have a, I just have an assembly line,
yeah,
of stuff just moving down, and that's it. You know, I got my work cut out for me. You know, because making the conscious decision to not bootleg and not use pop culture references, you're immediately shooting yourself in the foot.
Yeah.
You know, but I think having a unique vision pays off over time. And so fingers crossed.
Yeah.
Here's hoping. Yeah, yeah.
I can't wait to see all the stuff that's coming. I think that I know from like seeing all your work and seeing what you did with the comic book and the cards and all that, so much of you is in your work. It's hard to separate those things. I think that some artists, myself included, like you see our work and then you see us, you're like, I would never connected it. But for you, I can't wait to see what it looks like to fully focus in on toys and really do that, because it's just going to bring those toys to life more with you.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, yeah. I'm very excited. You know, last year when I said like this is the new thing, you know, I did. I got very excited about it, and to sit and do something for so long. It's hard to find that excitement. It's hard to find the joy or fun in those things. That in itself becomes the job.
Yeah.
Is mining for inspiration and mining for the joy. And, you know, so when you find a little bit of it, or you, when you trip over some of it, you know,
it's yeah,
a eureka moment. So I'm very happy with where this is right now.
Yeah. For 2025, what shows are we heading to?
I don't even know. I mean, DesignerCon, obviously. I said I will do DesignerCon as long as I am physically able. And as long as it's around, I said, I will do that no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, that's the show for what we do. And so I'll be doing DesignerCon. And I don't even know what's coming up. You know, I've done Pasadena Comic Con in the past, but that got canceled because, you know, Pasadena burned down.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a tragedy what's going on around here. So I don't know. I've been contemplating something that's not exactly a show. I don't know what it is. It's a little bit of an idea, but I'm working on it.
Yeah.
And I don't know what it is. So don't ask.
Okay. Well, if you need Toys on Tap to come alongside, you tell us.
All right. I will. Yeah, I don't know. I don't think I have anything on the books right now. No comment.
Well, Scott, it's always a pleasure having you on.
Of course.
And to talk.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and to talk all things art and all kinds of stuff. The last part, you know how it works. You plug stuff. You get to plug wherever you want people to go, sign up for your newsletter, all that stuff.
Yeah.
So plug away.
All right. Yeah. It's barbarianrage.com. And on there you will, if you want to sign up for my newsletter, like I said, it's toy news. It's not just about me because it gets so boring and it's a little much just to talk about yourself every week. But so it's toy news, designer toy news, upcoming shows, and everything that I do. If you want to buy my toys, everything drops on my newsletter first. You know, like I've already expressed my disdain for Instagram. I'm not even on Facebook or TikTok or whatever. Everything that I do is centralized through my website. And everything that I do, all things Barbarian Rage, gets announced on my newsletter. I have, obviously, the Necrovenger. I have a couple one-offs. I have some stuff painted by Akashic Records, Dave Linares. I have I have one last Magitarius. I've got... I made some apparel. I made some Necrovenger shirts that, you know, I thought were pretty awesome. You know, making shirts there again, it's like you design a shirt that you would love to wear.
You're
going to be wearing them. I have some of those made. They're really nice shirts. I really dug deep to find a really good printer on those because I knew if I was going to make shirts again, that it wasn't going to be some cheap shit. Like it was going to actually be a really nice, good, reputable printer on quality shirts. Because, you know, I bought so many shirts that I bought a shirt that the paint came off on the second wash.
Oof.
This is just last year. And when that happened, that's when I was like, shirts, you have to make them like awesome, otherwise don't do them. So I have some Necrovenger shirts on there. They're cool. They look like death metal, like a death metal shirt. And I've got some hats and some enamel pins and stuff like that. And I have the open Necrovenger. If you spend $300 on my website, I'll give you a gold pin. Oh, I got one right here. There. Do that. It's not advertised.
It's a beauty.
It's not advertised, but yeah, if you spend $300 on the website, I'll give you a gold pin. If you spend over $100, free shipping in the United States. How's that? How's that? That's my spiel.
Scott,
you gotta work on that.
Thanks for coming on.
Thank you so much. I really enjoyed our talk. I always do.